Hello, welcome to another episode of the South Talkies podcast. Yes, we have changed our name from Marubadium to South Talkies. When we started Marubadium, we wanted to have a nostalgia podcast about 90s, 80s and 70s Tamil movies that we love. However, since then we've expanded our scope and we've started talking about some fantastic films in Malayalam, Kannada and from this episode, Telugu as well. We will continue to look back at older Tamil movies while continuing to discuss latest content from all four languages in the South. So let's jump across to our first episode under the new name where we talk about the endearing and beautiful Telugu movie Care of Kanchare Padam. This is a Telugu movie released in 2018, directed by Venkatesh Maha and produced by Praveena Paruchuri. This is a slice of life film which starred mostly over 80 non-actors, most of them, you know, native to the town Kanchare Padam where the story is set. In my view, this is one of the greatest Telugu movies I've ever watched. To talk about this movie, we have coming back to our show, Pallavi. Welcome back.
Hi, everyone.
Anyway, so we will delve headfirst into the movie. But before that, I'd like to just put out this warning. This discussion contains a lot of spoilers. So in case you've not watched the movie, please go ahead, watch it first and then come back and listen to this. That would be a great way to enjoy this podcast. So starting off, Care of Kanchare Padam is a slice of life film, as in it talks about the different stages of one man's journey at different points in his life. But the twist in the tale is that it looks like an anthology film where, you know, it looks like there are four different stories that are running in parallel, while in reality, there are four different stories at different stages. Specifically, if you look at it, somewhere first story, the story of two school students, Sunita and Sundaram, which is set in the late 1970s, definitely after 1978. I will give the reason for that later. The second story is somewhat in the late 80s, which is between Joseph and Bhargavi. The third story is again in the late 90s between Gaddam and Salima. And the last story, Raju and Radha, is set in the present day time. Before we go further, Pallavi, do you want to share what are your overall views on the movie first?
Definitely agree with you on pretty much the best Telugu movie I've ever watched, with the limited resources and the non-actors, like you said, who had, you know, no background in movies. I think they've come out with a gem. I thoroughly enjoyed the movie and totally a refreshing take on some really important things we must address in society.
I think the genius in the movie, which I really got blown away when I, you know, got the ending for the first time, was that, you know, other than the writing and the direction and the performance, is that all four stories are, you know, shot in such a way that you almost think that, you know, they are happening at the same time. Of course, there is always the nagging feeling that, you know, other than the Raju and Radha track, you know, there are no mobile phones or TVs in any of the other or in, you know, any other modern gadgets or, you know, visions of modern life in the other stories. But then the performance and the writing is so good that, you know, your attention doesn't, is not taken away from that. So this was something that I wanted to say upfront. Great filmmaking. This is something that I don't think can be taught in any film school or anything like that. This is something that only a filmmaker can execute with his dedication and passion. Anyway, we will go to the first story. We'll go in chronological order. So the first story in the late 1970s is between Sunita and Sundaram, who are students in a village school. Sundaram's father is a local statue maker who has decided to run his own business in making the local village statues after a fight with his boss. So this is going on in parallel while Sundaram is trying to impress Sunita. How did you see this? I don't know. Can we call this a love track or is it like something like a puppy love? How did you see that?
I think it's about, the first love in anybody's life. I think
really, I don't know. I didn't have any love with this stage. I was just, you know.
No, I'm just saying it could happen at any age.
No, I was at least, something, you know, just you know, told to study and all of this anyway. Okay.
So, yeah, maybe for the few who actually experienced it at that age or, you know, during teenage, and I don't have an example like that as well. But yeah, we've seen it. We've heard, you know, our friends talk about such things. So, yeah, so I think it's about how it's like, it is like kind of puppy love and in a way friendship. And also, there is also the sidetrack about him and his father, that whole thing about making the statue. So this, it's talking about two different things at the same time. So yeah, I think they didn't play too much on the love story. Of course, it is one sided, and but yeah, they had a good friendship, and yeah, so it was a sweet story. Yeah.
I think the core theme of Care of Kancharai Palam is belief, right? Do you believe in people or do you believe in God? And this theme starts off very strongly in the story where, the protagonist's father is actually a maker of idols of God. And there is a difficult situation, and then, he takes upon this huge project which could actually, ruin the family. But then they trust in God and start it, and everybody believes in God at that time. Later on he becomes a non-believer. But then this is the running theme through the movie, which is discussed in the other stories also, and we will touch upon that. But I thought it was a very nice way to start it. It sort of creeps upon you, where the father, has to make the huge Ganesha idol, and they pray to this. And it's very nice, right? He has to make a huge Ganesha idol, but then he makes a small sketch of it on a paper and frames it, and they actually pray to it. So I thought that part was very nicely, very smoothly flowed into the story. It doesn't disrupt any of the proceedings, and it goes in parallel.
I really appreciated his father's character. He's somebody who, he believes in his craft. He doesn't have any other skill at his disposal. He's not a shrewd businessman. He can barely speak well. So his only skill is that he's the best sculptor in town, and he just has the confidence of executing this. Of course, he has, like, every man has a woman in his life who sort of backs him and all. His wife is the strong woman who sort of is the sort of the brain in the family, and that's really great for that time that she was so empowered. And yeah, and of course the theme about belief and believe in God, and of course that is sort of brought around by talking about him making the statue itself and his son losing faith in God due to various reasons. So yeah, it's the movie is about love and also about belief.
So the father's character, since you mentioned, right, he had this hilarious scene. So I have two favorite scenes in the movie, and the first scene is actually his fight with his boss. Okay, so where they disagree on what is the salary the boss should give him, and they end up, physically fighting. But then this guy has a stutter, so he cannot talk properly. That was just, so every time he has to argue with his boss, he writes it on a piece of paper and there is this other attender who reads it. It was black comedy at its best, I felt. Boss is obviously being an ass there, he just kicks him out and all of that. And towards the end of the scene is that, when he finally tells him, I'm getting out of this place and you're going to go to ruins, I will make my own statues. And then the boss, literally kicks him out of the office, if you can call that. And he just turns back very angrily, and the other attender, asks him, do you want to write something? And this fellow just angrily leaves. That was hilarious. So that was one amazing scene. The Sunita Sundaram, puppy love story didn't do a lot for me. I don't know if I'm just beyond enjoying that.
It was more of a friendship.
In fact, when it broke up also, I thought the kid was being really stupid by, trying to throw stones at the Ganesha idol and all of that. He was perfectly happy when, Ganesha gave him the chance to talk to that girl. But the girl goes away and he's like, God is an evil person. I don't know. At least that was my take on it.
But that's how we are. No, we are absolute when we are younger. No, if he works for you, yes, it's great. If not, you just hate that other person. So that's how, when you're younger, you think in absolutes, while over time you're like, okay. And there is a middle area also. So I think it's a reflection of his age. Yeah.
I think that's a great point. I didn't look at it that way. But I still felt that, breaking down an entire statue on which his father has put his blood and sweat was a little... I don't know. Even if I was a kid, I would never have dared to do that. My father was spanked me if that was his job.
I realized that too. Yeah, it was far too brave for him to do that. Maybe his father is not that strict or whatever.
I think it's also shown. His father is not a very emphatic man at home. It's like a collective thing. It's not like... Anyway, so yeah, not a lot to talk about the segment. Actually, the father's character was more powerful, and also his end was, I thought, very sad. He dies for no fault of his, despite having made like the perfect statue that he wanted to make. So I thought his ending was very sad. This was like the best part. So the writing of his character, then you know, when you have a character who has a stutter, it can be very easy to play to the gallery by, you know, having easy laughs. But they did not do any of that in this movie. They made him a very dignified character who wants to make it out on his own. So his character was the favorite in this segment for me.
I agree with that. I think he got, they wouldn't have ended his character in any other way. But my surprise was that they did not address his death again ever in the movie. Or, I mean, even in the end when we figure out that, you know, it's the same character, but somehow that guilt aspect is not played upon in the movie. Usually it's a good ploy, you know, I was sort of responsible.
Yeah, I think it's not touched in detail.
That was not played upon. I mean, I thought that was something like unexpected for me. I mean, that's a usual ploy in movies.
This reference is just not put on the audience's nose. It is just very obliquely referenced in both Joseph and Bhargavi's timeline and also during Geddam's timeline. So since what we will do is we will begin by talking about Joseph and Bhargavi with the reference where Joseph has already mentions that, you know, he's a converted Christian sometime in the middle of their sect. So what I was trying to explain is that Joseph was more likely converted to Christianity because, you know, he lost belief in the Hindu system because, you know, he was separated from Sunita and then his father also passed away and all of that. So with that, we will begin the Joseph discussion on the Joseph Bhargavi segment, which is my second favorite segment in the film. But before I say anything, I would like to listen to your views about this particular story.
Yeah, I think at that point, at that juncture in his life, maybe he did not lose faith in, I mean, religion overall, but I think his school of thought, as in Hinduism, is what he lost faith in, and somebody must have influenced him to sort of think about Christianity, and then he's like, okay, let me give this a shot. Maybe that's why he converted. So, I mean, that backstory obviously is not talked about, but yeah, I think he just wanted to, he never lost belief in a higher power, but he just changed his direction.
Yeah, but on the overall part of this love story, what is your take? See, it's a typical 80s love story with guy and girl from different religion or from a different socio-economic background, but it still felt very fresh. Why do you think that was?
I think one thing is that in this case, it's a story of a sort of a mismatched couple. I mean, the guy is sort of not really from, he doesn't come from money or education, while the girl comes from, you know, from a good family and is studying and is a good student and all those things. There's no reason why she would be attracted to a guy like that. But then, of course, opposites attract, as in real life and in movies. As you said, it's sort of an 80s movies kind of a thing where people of different backgrounds come together. But yeah, but the thing which is sort of refreshing is, I think, Bhargavi's character. I think she has spunk for a woman of that era who, I mean, at that time, women were sort of shown as really demure and not having a voice, while she really sort of, you know, kills in every frame she's on, and she has an opinion about everything. She's not afraid to talk what she feels. She fights for a cause if she feels it's right. So that's something which was refreshing. In today's time, a character like that is totally acceptable, like women are more empowered, while she, not being from even a tier one city or anything of that sort, she's from a small town, and still having that much boldness, as you would say, is something exceptional.
In addition to her bold nature, something that I liked was the casting of Bhargavi. You know, typically when they talk about a Brahmin woman, they cast like really, you know, feminine, fair, women who's slim, and, you know, she's more like conventional kind of beauty that people would expect. But this girl, you know, she was slightly on the plump side, she has a dark complexion, and still, you know, it was a slightly, going against the grain kind of a casting. So I really liked that part. And like you said, she has a mouth on her, right? And she shuts down everybody. When this guy also, you know, kind of tries to argue with her when she's gone to seek help, she's like, you know, I don't care kind of this thing. When her acquaintance tries to give her some advice on her love life, saying, you know what, this is how it doesn't look all rosy, she shuts him up in the beginning itself, saying, you know what, this is what I have decided and I believe in it and I'm going to go through it. So I think her dialogues are really good. So yeah, dialogue were like a delight, and also it was very sad. But you know, towards end, it was very sad that she, you know, she does have a fight with her father. She doesn't give up so easily. You know, her dad, you know, just argues with her, saying, you know, you come from such a pure Brahmin family. How could you go and fall in love with a Christian guy? And you know, what are you going to do about it? I will never let this happen. In fact, he threatens suicide, right? And he's like, you know, if this happens, I will commit suicide. And she calls him bluff. She's like, this is what your parents do all the time. And I'm not going to fall for this. But sadly, apparently, what happens behind the scenes and what we don't get to see, but we are left to infer, is that her father has actually sort of carried out the threat of suicide. And she appears defeated towards the end of her segment. Something that, you know, you can never expect, something that you would have never expected from her, knowing how her character was and how she, you know, carried herself. So that was a very sad ending. It was a very typical 80s ending. There are so many 80s movies we've seen where people in the opposite social strata, religion or whatever caste have not gotten together and, you know, they died in the end. But nobody dies here, but it was quite sad to see that ending.
Yeah, it's like you said, that it's, in the end, she sort of loses her personality and sort of becomes defeated and, you know, appears like, you know, she's given up. And at her age, to see something like that, it's very sad, like a young girl like her losing spirit. But yeah, I think seeing her family circumstances, that which is not shown in, we are left to infer, I think she had no choice and she made that decision. But yeah, I think it was a sad love story, but I don't see any other ending for it.
It's also very interesting, right? There are some themes that are spoken about so much in today's social or, you know, social discussions, dinner table discussions, arguments on news and in between people. Is that, you know, there has always been this kind of prickliness between religions, like especially the idea of, you know, Christians trying to convert others, or, you know, having all these prayer meetings. She attends a prayer meeting with her boyfriend, right? She goes to place and she attends it, and her father turns out to be at the same place, and he comments to the guy to whom he has gone to sell an insurance policy, is like, you know, these guys are just, you know, useless, they keep doing this stuff. And then she figures out that his client is a Christian. And the funny part is, like, you know, when he apologizes, the guy just brushes it off very brusquely, saying, you know what, I'm used to this now. Right. So you know, we think that all these things are just happening now, but it's been happening for a long time. It's almost like, you know, the more things change, the more they remain the same. It's like almost nothing has changed in 30 years. So it was very interesting to see that part as well.
I think this movie is very much a reflection of how people think in general. I think there is always, despite us being a secular country, but there is obviously that feeling of, you know, negativity towards the other religion, which we don't belong to. I mean, even in families which are open to, you know, having friendships with other religions, we see that conversation of, you know, those people convert, or, I mean, I don't like what they do, or how, I mean, they don't like the other religion's way of living or talking. So there is always that small bit of animosity or joke or, you know, comment about the other religion, which never, I mean, it's sort of reflection of our society in general.
Yeah, so that was very, I think, illuminating. So that takes us to segment number 3, my favorite segment in this movie, which is the love story between Gaddam and Salima. Salima is my favorite character in the entire movie, purely because of her performance and also the way her character is written. So the sex worker character is a stock, right? And it has been performed in, and written in a lot of different ways. There are movies where the sex worker is, you know, shown to be in a, how do I say it, you know, she's in a very bad state emotionally, physically, and there's this guy who comes to rescue her, you know, she finds refuge in somebody. Or, you know, you may have like a sex worker character who's written in a negative manner, you know, somebody who tries to cheat people or something. But this character is written in a very positive, confident way. She knows what she's doing. I mean, she probably is doing it because she has no other choice. But she's not ashamed of it. I mean, she feels sad that she is in that business. But then she does not, you know, put herself down for it. She's doing that and she's like okay with it. until, you know, she meets Gundam, and then meeting, there are two meeting scenes between them under the bridge. So those are like really brilliant. Before I go on talking about it for a while, I will talk about a particular scene, but before that, I wanted to understand what is it that you liked or did not like about this entire segment.
Yeah, I sort of really liked her character as well. I think it was brilliantly written and portrayed by the actress. What I liked about her is that she owns herself being a sex worker. She has been put in that position because what I understand is her mother herself was a sex worker. So she was born into that life. And she had no other option. But despite of that, she doesn't shy away from, you know, she doesn't hide from society. And she for example, that whole thing about her drinking and coming to, you know, the local bar to pick up alcohol and standing outside. And, you know, they don't show her overly aggressive and, you know, so-called, you know, fighting against society kind of a character. But she stands up for herself. She doesn't take shit from anybody. And even when she was offered sympathy or, you know, told that, okay, I mean, she needs to be uplifted or whatever, she doesn't think so. I think she can take care of herself despite her being, you know, with a man or not. I think that's something which is to be appreciated.
I think you made a great point there, right? You don't have to be aggressive to be confident. See, in a very recent movie that came out last year, Gully Boy, Alia Bhatt is shown to be a very confident character, but she also comes across as a little aggressive. Whether that is because of the nature of the city she lives in, or I don't know whether directors think that, you know, for a woman to come across as confident, she has to be a little aggressive. You go a little behind, you take a movie like Tanu Veds Mano. There also Kangana Ranaut is maybe overtly confident character, right? And she also still comes across as aggressive. And if you look at a Tamil movie, I don't know if you might not have watched this, but there is a movie called Engeyum Eppodum, which is also like an anthology movie. There, again, the character is shown to be confident, but I don't know. For some reason, writers and directors in India feel that for a woman to be perceived as confident, she has to be aggressive. And here, they don't do it. She is confident in what she does and what she speaks. She doesn't have to, you know, push around people or, you know, has to be over the top to bring that about. I think that's a great point, and that's where I think the writing excels.
Yeah, I think also what really helps this segment of the movie is I really like their pairing, the love story. I found it very interesting. I mean, first of all, showing a guy being okay with a sex worker itself, though he's taken aback that she is one, but him being totally okay with it instantaneously almost is very refreshing, though I don't know how much it is, you know, it is really applicable to, I mean, real life. I don't think there are too many people who would be really that broad-minded. But yeah, I really liked how their relationship was. She, despite her being from a less privileged situation, she never gives up her stance, and she puts her point across that this is what I want, and she gets what she wants. So I really like that play of the character.
Yeah, and my favorite scene, two favorite scenes are the ones, right, where he first proposes to her and she reveals that she was the prostitute who had come to his house the other day. He's so taken aback, he has nothing to say, and then, you know, she just leaves with a smirk. But the next thing, he goes back and he's like, you know what, I don't care. And, you know, I wouldn't be in love with you. I am in love with you, I will get married to you. And, you know, she's like, you know, give up all of this. And that entire conversation was amazing, where he asks her to give up the job and she's like, you know, who are you? You come like a hero or what to save me? I don't need your saving. And, you know, the conditions he puts are also very logical. You know, she says that, you know, you have to introduce me to your friends and you have to let me do this until I feel comfortable enough to trust you. I think people will have to watch this scene to actually get how really cute it was. I think there have been so many proposal scenes over the years. It was, this is one of the best I've seen.
Agree.
You know, despite
the relationship, but really works.
It really works. Because in very honest, I think that's the part that really takes it, right? She was very honest up front. She's like, yeah, okay, I'm okay. But you'll have to go through this. I just can't trust you just because you tell you're a great person or whatever, you're a good person. So amazing, but a very sad ending for this couple. Again, something that is still prevalent today. So, you know, it's like it, ageless and timeless, I think. Discrimination between religions and discrimination within the religion.
And treating the oldest profession of prostitution as something which is sort of disgraceful. I mean, she's doing it in at her own will, and she was not, you know, respected for that. So, sadly, for a character like her, we see a really sad ending. But then that sort of helps, you know, continue the story arch, I guess.
So, it's also left to the viewer to guess, right? So we are left to guess or assume that she's been killed by the local people in her colony, the Muslim colony. So do they kill her, you know, because they figured out she's a sex worker? Or do they kill her because they find out that she's in a relationship with a man from another religion? What is your... I think either way it makes no sense. But what is your guess? What do you think would have happened?
I think it's purely because she's a Muslim woman and she's... she is a prostitute, and that is the reason why she gets killed. I don't think her relationship could be a factor, but I think, people figure out that she is doing what she's doing and they're not okay with it. It's sort of disgraceful to their society.
Yeah, I think that's a fair guess what you have made. It is a fair guess, and I think it is more likely the reason why she was, I don't know, murdered or forced to commit suicide, or more likely the former. So by this time, you know, Gaddam, I mean, so we, or Raju, I mean, we don't know what his real name is. Yes, he was initially Sundaram, and then he's Joseph, and then he's like Gaddam. Gaddam is more like a nickname. I think it's because of the hair he has. And finally, he becomes Raju. So we'll finally come to the key. I don't know, but this is sort of the key... story, I guess, because this is the story that finally brings out the spirit of Kanchare Palam and gives meaning to the title of the movie. This segment I did not find as interesting. It was okay. I mean, I thought it had a lot of lighter moments compared to the rest of the movie. But I don't know. What did you think?
Yeah, I really didn't. I mean, the couple was not my favorite in this part of the movie. But, I mean, there was not really any chemistry or actual, you know, moments of romance, which, you know, which were really endearing. But what I appreciate is this is a couple which sort of came out of all odds. There was nothing which is going for them. So much so that the guy involved in it didn't know that he was in a love story. So I think they fight things like her being of a higher rank in her profession than him. And that is a big thing in a smaller town. Her second relationship, she looking for a second marriage, she already having a child. And in general, disapproval of family. So many things against them, but still sort of, this is the one which worked.
Yeah, in this particular segment, so there are 3 points that I wanted to talk about. The first is the sexuality of the man, the second is the sexuality of the woman, and the third is, you know, the idea of feminism and women in society. So the first is that, you know, this guy, Raju, has a very hilarious situation. I mean, it looks hilarious for us, but I don't know how it would be, you know, if one of us was in the situation. He's not been married, he's 49, so the village automatically decides that he's gay. And he has to be excommunicated or thrown out of the village, to use a simpler term. It's very sad, right, that his friends are also assumed to be gay because he is. Just because he's not married. It's hilarious. It does prove for some lighter moments in the movie. But I think it also raises a serious question as to how people look at, you know, if he was actually gay, you know, would it still be a right thing to do? So that's one thing that I wanted to say. The second thing about female sexuality is, I think Radha is 42. She's diabetic and she has a, you know, 20-year-old daughter, I guess. And she personally herself needs a certain amount of thinking to consider herself ready for another marriage or ready for another relationship. So do you think that's from... that's more of an internal conflict, or is it also because of the social factors? Because much later in the movie, she does seem to be very confident of what she's doing.
Yeah, so two things I would like to address. You brought up the gay angle. I think, firstly, there are two things wrong with that situation. One thing is being called gay without him, you know, admitting to it or coming out of the closet, and this assumption that being not unmarried for up till the age of 49, you know, directly relegates him to the status of gay. Second thing, of course, that is a little progressive for a small town like that, but the fact that he is so perturbed that he's called gay, that itself, obviously, a lot of people would face that even in the city that if they're, you know, assumed to be gay, they find it very disturbing. So both of those aspects are really saddening. So second thing is about her, you know, sort of taking time to sort of come to the terms that she does want to get married again, and she seeks her daughter's approval. You know, I think it's a big internal struggle for any person who has gone through, you know, situation in her life where she's lost her spouse, but wants to again, you know, find love in her life, and she finds somebody who she thinks is sort of deserving of her love and, you know, respect and partnership. So, and she finds somebody like that, though he's not the ideal partner for her in terms of societal standards, but she still takes the step of, you know, telling him that she's interested. That's huge for a person in her situation and would require courage for any woman. So I think that's something to be appreciated and very remarkable about that character, that she took that stand.
Yeah, okay, so the third point what I wanted to talk about was, you know, it is a very small moment, but I think it was very impactful. When her daughter is scandalized by the fact that, you know, her mother wants to get married at 42, and she's like, you know, what will this person say? What will our mom, what will your own brother say? And her mom just shuts her up saying that, you know what, you keep talking about feminism all the time, but when it comes to walking the talk, what the hell are you doing? I think that is also a question to everybody who is watching the movie. It's like, yeah, it's all nice to talk about this, but when it comes to real life, would you guys step up and do this? So I think that was a very good message. And, you know, her uncle, actually, you know, he goes entirely, it's like, you know, my 42-year-old sister can also choose who to marry. My 20-year-old niece cannot also choose who to date. So at the end of the day, you have to do what is, you know, apparently considered acceptable as societal norms or what I deem to be acceptable. So I thought that was very good. And the fact that we're living in 2000, this story is most likely happening in, what, 2017 or 18. Yeah, so it's very funny, and it's very sad that in 2017 or 18, where the story is most likely happening, the man doesn't deem it acceptable for his 40-year-old sister also to make a choice of her own, nor his 20-year-old niece to decide who to date. And I think the entire thread was very well conceived and written, keeping in mind what is happening still today. So I found that bit to be very impactful. The ending obviously was supposed to be a little funny, I guess, you know, with the old couple running along and all of that, and the villages turning up to be, you know, a very emotional ending. Didn't do a lot for me, but I don't think there would have been any other better way to wrap up that particular story.
Yeah, for me, I think, yeah, there was no other way to end it. But yeah, I mean, I'm really never rooting for this couple as such. They don't win my heart through the movie. But yeah, you wouldn't want a different ending as such. Yeah, but I think through that section of the movie, they're trying to convey a few things, mostly, you know, in terms of social messages is what they wanted to bring in, like elderly people, you know, falling in love or getting married is okay. People from different walks of life are getting married is okay. She's from a different state and she doesn't speak the language of the region. Despite that is not really addressed in the film, but I think they already had so many things against him that conversation never came up. But yeah, so I mean, I think the main aspect which is sort of addressed there is people can get married and find love at any stage in their life. So that's the best message I got from that part of the movie.
Okay, I think you preempted my question. I actually wanted to ask you, so what is it that you take away from this movie?
Okay. Yeah, actually, there are a few takeaways from the film. I think all the social causes, though they were quite a few in this. I mean, in if a movie is talking about so many social causes at the same time, it can be, it can sound a little preachy, but somehow this movie manages to not do that. But what they do very well is that they don't really tell you what is wrong about the situation. They just show the wrong which is happening. So that way it doesn't end up being preachy, and that's why it works. Second thing is brilliant, performances despite of them being non-actors. I think that might have helped them in a way that they played normal people really well. So I think it's written really tightly. The dialogues are really good, and in screenplay also, I think they've done a good job. I think with the limited budget they had, I think they did brilliantly well.
Okay, so for me, the key takeaway from this movie was the discussion on belief and freedom of choice. So this is a small segment where Raju is sitting with Radha in the temple, and she asks him, like, what God do you believe in? And he tells this, and he tells that he doesn't believe in God, he believes in people. And then he talks about instances in his life, you know, small instances where, you know, for example, if he's late with his rent, his landlord doesn't make a big deal, or his friend who helps him out whenever he needs it. I think that is the question, right? Do you believe in God or do you believe in people? And I think the message this movie wants to put out is that when there is a conflict between God and people, trust in people.
Right.
And because they are the ones that are there and they are the ones that are more important. The second element that I felt that a theme that ran throughout the movie is the struggle to have a freedom of choice, right? Whether you are 10 and you want to sing a particular song, the girl wants to sing the song, but her dad doesn't allow it because he thinks it's indecent. Whether it is or not is up for discussion, and it's a different topic, but you know, she's not able to do that. When they are 20, they are not able to decide who they can marry. The same thing comes around when they are 30 and when they are 40. Just pure freedom of choice on what you want to do or what you don't want to do is tied down by a lot of societal norms, religion, and other people's feelings about what, you know, your life should be. I think this is another key takeaway we have to take from this message, is that, you know, just because we are not comfortable about something does not mean that we should judge or, you know, put pressure on people to not do a specific thing. Because, you know, they may not show it, but I think societal pressure does have a great impact. You know, if, for example, you are trying to do something unconventional, I can either encourage you or I think I should shut my mouth. Because, you know, I may make a passing comment, or, you know, a number of people may say something, you don't know what sort of idiocy is this. Of course, there are people who rise above that and do it. But I think society must encourage the different. And that's one of my favorite lines from Ratatouille as well, is that we have to give the new a chance and we have to give the different a chance. I think these two are the key takeaways I have from this movie.
Yeah, I think the movie itself is very different, and I think what is the message in the movie is coming across in how the movie is made and sort of the characters. I think what I now, when I think about it, I think about the character of Raju, what and all he went through in life, and despite of that, at the age of 49, when he's gone through so many struggles, lost so many good people in his life, seen so much pain, despite of that, he's sort of positive and, you know, goes on with his life with a smile on his face, trying to help everybody new who's coming into the village. And, you know, that kind of positivity is something which, I mean, we should take away from the film, that, you know, despite adversity, people can be happy and, you know, get ahead in life. So it's a beautiful story in a way.
Anyway, so that will be a wrap on the discussion for Care of Kancharepalam. The movie is available on Netflix. Please check it out in case you've not watched it already. If you've watched it already, watch it another time. I would definitely recommend. It will be a great experience if you can understand the other layers in the movie. And if you have any specific comments or feedback you want to give regarding our discussion, please do so on the Anchor app or send us an email. Till we come back with the next discussion, it was great bringing this movie to you. Bye, and have a great day.
Bye, everyone.